Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to a summer edition of Bio 231, Human Anatomy. There's a lecture for today. We're going to finish up muscles today. And today is July 7th. Let's take a look at the schedule. So July 7th, Muscles of the Body, Chapter 11, we're going to finish up today. And that also means that July 8th, which is tomorrow, you get your second lecture exam in here on chapters 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Right? So this is the last lecture of the material that will be on the exam for tomorrow. Okay, and since tomorrow is an exam, what do you need to bring with you? Pencil? Really good eraser? Forget about the eraser that's on your pencil. Usually it just smudges things up. 882E or an 882ES, that works fine. Right, don't forget a really good eraser, and then a picture ID. You'll need a picture ID. And I'll try to get here a little bit early, maybe around 8 o'clock or so, and I'll open up, so as soon as you want to come on in the room, you can start taking the test. Take a little time pressure off yourself, if you desire. But if you want to get to school early and study a little bit, that's fine with me. Just stay out in the hallway, right, because the test will be live in here. All right, so what else do I know? Then the day after, Thursday, your second practicum. And part of that will be muscles, but only facial muscles. Right? So then the third practicum will contain most of the other muscles in the body. Okay, anybody have a question on the schedule at all? Schedule looks okay. All right, so let's continue talking about some muscles today. Okay, let's put that right there. So we were doing pretty good. We got through muscle interactions, and I think there are maybe four different ways you should think about muscles if they have some kind of functional interaction. The first one is if they're in the same body compartment, if they're in the same area of your body, right, if they're in the same location, right, what can you tell me about their function? Key on the word same. They're going to have the same function, okay? So if they're anterior compartment, you're going to have a group of muscles, right? They're going to be synergist because they have the same function. And one really good muscle group to understand, let's see if I can find it here. Let's look at, oh, here's an exam figure. This is pretty nice. All right, so if we look at the anterior arm, I see the biceps brachii, and then right underneath it, the brachialis, but both of these muscles are anterior to the humerus, so they're in the anterior arm. They're going to be both forearm flexors. And a forearm flexor is the same thing as an elbow flexor. Flexion at the elbow is the same thing as forearm flexion. You could think about it, talk about it in either way, either by the joint or by the body part that's moving. All right, so biceps brachii brachialis are both forearm flexors, so therefore they are what we call synergist muscles. And usually, if you have a group of muscles all in the same body compartment producing the same kind of function or same motion, usually one muscle is the most important compared to all the others. And if there is a muscle that's more important compared to all the others, we call it a prime mover. And here we got a couple muscles that we just talked about, biceps brachii and brachialis. The strongest one in that group is the brachialis. So I would call the brachialis what? The prime mover. All right, so we're halfway done with understanding the functional relationship between muscles. And then the next one are antagonistic muscles. And if we're going to have muscles in exactly opposite locations of the body, their function is going to be exactly what? Opposite to each other. And if that's the case, then they're going to be antagonistic muscles. Okay, so again, let's look about here in the arm. We've got biceps brachii for forearm flexion. That's in the anterior arm. So where would you automatically start thinking about an antagonist to the biceps or the brachialis? The posterior arm, and you know the muscle back there, which I can just barely see. Maybe if I go forward one slide, here I see the triceps, right? Posterior. It's going to be posterior to the humerus. That's the triceps brachii. So triceps and biceps brachii are antagonistic to each other. They produce opposite motions, but probably in terms of anatomy, you should just automatically realize they are in opposite body compartments. That's going to be really useful for you because you don't have to memorize a lot of stuff if you just follow that particular rule. And then the fourth class of muscles are what we call fixators. Fixators don't produce any kind of motion, but they provide tension to a particular bone that acts as an origin for another muscle so that that other muscle can pull on that bone without moving that bone, and then it will move the insertion, the bone on the insertion, in a proper fashion. So a fixator just puts things in a proper position so that other muscles can work properly, can produce a certain kind of motion. So that helps the action of other muscles, but it also helps protect and stabilize joints, which is just as important because joints really can only be used in how they're designed to use by their structure. Okay. All right, so those are muscle interactions, some physiology of these muscles. Now let's go to something else that's going to be really helpful to you, and that is nomenclature on how we name muscles. And anytime you can learn nomenclature, that is really nice because then you don't have to memorize everything if you just know about the rules, about how muscles are named. So if you know the rules, you will know how to name muscles even if you've never heard of them before. So that's really, really handy, right? You don't have to study thousands or millions of muscles to know what their name is. Just know some nomenclature. So here are some examples of how muscles are named. They can be named by their location, by their shape, by the relative size, direction of the fascicles, location of attachments, number of origins, and even their actions. Well, that seems like a really long list, but you know, it's not. It's going to help you a lot. All right, so let's go talk about this first one, naming muscles by their location, which was one of the things that you had to know on the first exam, and that was we had a picture of a human body, and you had to know different regions, like cervical regions, otic regions, optic regions, abdominal regions, right? So don't forget that. So brachialis is in the brachium, and brachium is the arm. Right, so the brachialis is going to be located in the arm as a result of that. Intercostals, acosta means rib, inter means in between the ribs. So there are muscles in between the ribs, and so we call these the intercostals. We have a couple of different kinds of intercostals. All right, I have some external intercostals, which are superficial, and of course you can see the ribs. And we have some muscles between the ribs. Those are intercostals. That's one layer. And then there's a deeper layer that we call the internal intercostals. And can you tell me, when you look at these two muscles, can you tell that they are different? The skeleton that you see right here is in exactly the same orientation. The skeleton is exactly the same. You see that the muscles are different. What are you looking at to tell that the muscles are different? I mean, it's really hard to see until you notice that the arrangement of fascicles is completely different. For the external intercostals, from superior to inferior, they're angulating, what, anteriorly. But for the internal intercostals, as you go from superior to inferior, the fascicles are oriented posteriorly. Right, so they have different orientations, and as a matter of fact, exactly opposite orientations to each other, almost 90 degrees opposite orientations. And so you would expect that the actions of these two muscles are going to be exactly opposite each other. And this is true. And you should probably write down, right, that these are important muscles for breathing, and the function of the external intercostals, which is the superficial group, is for inspiration. So you probably don't have the slide printed out, but the external intercostal is for inspiration, and the internal intercostals are for expiration. And so the muscles are named by their location, external, internal, not by their function, which is inspiration and expiration, although there's an N and X in that inspiration, but it's kind of like the opposite. External for inspiration, internal for expiration. So you're going to move the rib cage a certain way. Okay, another way that we can name muscles is by shape. A really good example, a couple come to mind, is the deltoid muscle. The deltoid is on the tip of your shoulder. And let's go ahead and take a look at this diagram once again. So here is the top of shoulder, lateral part of your shoulder. This is the deltoid, and it has a very broad origin along the clavicle and the spine of the scapula. It's a very long distance, and the insertion is just at a single point. So it looks like a triangle, and you know what that single point is, right? What is that single point called on the humerus? It's mid-diaphysis, and laterally, that is the deltoid tuberosity. So that's going to be important for this exam and even the practicum, right? Deltoid tuberosity insertion for the deltoid muscle, named because of its shape. And since the deltoid tuberosity is the insertion, okay, what can you tell me about the humerus compared to the origin, which is along the clavicle and spine of the scapula? When the deltoid contracts, what moves? Is it the origin or the insertion of a muscle that produces the most motion? Yeah, it is the insertion, right? And since the insertion is the deltoid tuberosity on the humerus, it's the humerus that moves. So if you raise your arm up like that, then you can appreciate that the humerus is moving, so the insertion of the deltoid muscle is the deltoid tuberosity, not the clavicle and scapula. All right, just for review, what do we call that motion when the deltoid contracts and my arms move up like this? Not in front of my body, not behind my body, but just right in the same plane as my body. I'm moving my arms up like that. You got to know that motion even for the practicum probably. That is abduction. And when I bring my arms back down to my sides, that is adduction. So the function of the deltoid is what? Abduction. Okay, of the humerus. All right, you also have in your back, you also have, can I see him right here? Well, we can't really see him on this illustration. We have some muscles that look like rectangles. And if you have a rectangle and angulate it a little bit, you call that a rhomboid. And we have muscles that are called rhomboids. We'll look at those probably next week in lab. All right, so that's really handy. Relative size is easy. We have maximus here, we have minimus, and we have, there's also a brevis, okay, that I see right over here. So maximus means that there is going to be a group of muscles in that area of the body, and maximus is the biggest one of that group. And minimus is going to be participating in that group of muscles, but this is the dinkiest one. This is the smallest one in that group. And medius means, right, could be someplace right in the middle in terms of size. Some muscles that are in a group, sometimes one is longer than the other. And if that's the case, we're going to give it the name longest, as compared to some others in that particular group that are really short, and we would call that a brevis. So that's pretty handy. Direction of fascicles is another name. Rectus means straight. And rectus abdominis, also means what? Location, abdominal region. Rectus means straight. So here are some muscles that go straight, superior, inferior in the abdominal region. And if we look at our illustration over here, I can even see the rectus abdominis muscles, right? And they go straight up and down. And I think we'll talk about this in just a little bit. But the origin is going to be the pubic bone. The insertion is going to be the xiphoid process and some of these ribs up over here. So when the rectus abdominis contracts, what moves? Does the pubic bone move or does the xiphoid process move? Go ahead, contract that muscle. But be careful, don't hit your head on the table. Okay, what point moves when this rectus abdominis contracts? Xiphoid process or pubic bone? Okay, so I could contract this muscle right now, right, and you're going to see that my pubic bone does not move, because if it moved, then I'd pull it up off the floor, for instance, right? And it doesn't. Pubic bone just stays right where it is. Xiphoid process gets pulled down to the pubic bone. So the insertion is the xiphoid process. All right, external oblique. There are some other stomach muscles. And we have some stomach muscles that are straight transverse. So that's going to be the transverse abdominis. There are some that are at an angle to the major planes of the body. Okay, let me pull these up right up over here. Oh, wow, I lost that projector again. Rats. Did I miss? Came back? Okay. All right, so here are some abdominal muscles, right? So here is anterior. I can see the rectus abdominis that we were just looking at. Transverse abdominis is right in this transverse plane. Then we have some muscles that are at an angulation to the standard plane. So these are what? Both oblique. And the external of the oblique is called the external oblique. And then the deeper one is called the internal. I mean, superficial one is called the external oblique. The deeper one is called the internal oblique. And you can notice that the arrangement of the fascicles, okay, is a little bit different. And that just improves the strength of the abdominal wall. These are just layers of muscles. Okay, so here is a little bit different view. Here we see the rectus abdominis once again, and then the other three abdominal muscles, most superficial, external oblique. The next deepest is the internal oblique, and then the deepest one of that group is the transverse abdominis. And since they are all in the same body compartment, what can you tell me about these muscles? Same body compartment, same location, same. Key in the word same. They're going to have the same action, same function, okay? Which is going to be compression of the abdominal compartment. There are, you can see a lot of connective tissue sheets that surround these muscles, so the muscles don't touch each other, even though they interact. Some of these broad, flat, tendinous sheets are called aponeuroses. Not labeled on this slide, okay? But here are some aponeuroses. There's also an important tendon between the two divisions of the rectus abdominis, and it forms a straight line going up and down the body from superior to inferior, and that's the linea alba. Alba is white, and linea just means line. So let's go back and see if we can, here's the linea alba, right? And you can see all the particular abdominis muscles in this group very nicely. All right, what about our big exam figure? Can we see it on our big exam figure? Where's our exam figure? He walked away. Ah, right here. Okay. So here is that white line that's separating the right and left rectus abdominis muscles. That is called the linea alba. And only muscles are labeled on this illustration, but I can see the linea alba here. Is this pointing to something? No. Okay, but I see the linea alba. Okay, direction of fascicles, right? Rection, external. Okay, here is one that's going to be really handy. Location of attachments. And a muscle generally has two attachments, one on either end. And what do we call those attachment points for a muscle? Origin and insertion. Perfect. And the origin, how would you describe the origin in terms of function? Not by location, but in terms of function. Origin is the least movable end of a muscle, while the insertion is the more movable end of a muscle. Like the deltoid tuberosity is the insertion that produces motion on the humerus. Okay, and a muscle that we looked at in lab that I told you you would really like, I can even see it on this illustration here in the cervical region, it's the sternocleidomastoid. And remember, for a muscle, the first part of the word is going to be the origin, and then the end of the word is going to be the insertion. So the sternum and clavicle are the origins for the sternocleidomastoid, and the insertion is, it's in the name. Mastoid process on the temporal bone, which you're really familiar with. That could probably be on the what practicum coming up. Okay, so that's it on this nice exam figure. Where do we see it? Right here. If we zoom in, we take a nice coronal section through the cranium. We can see at the level of the mastoid process, we can see the mastoid process. And both of these bellies of the sternocleidomastoid insert into the mastoid process. So here's the origin on the sternum, here's the origin on the clavicle, hence sternocleidomastoid. So it seems like a very intimidating name, but it's not. It's your answer key, right? So that's really handy when the name of a muscle is your answer key. So where is your sternum? Is it anterior or posterior in your body? Anterior, right? So, and as a matter of fact, the clavicle is anterior as well, so the origin is anterior. The muscle course is a little bit posterior to find this mastoid process, but the sternocleidomastoid is in the anterior cervical region. And in lab, remember we said that if both sternocleidomastoids contract, that causes flexion of the cervical spine, right? If only one contracts, like my right one, that causes rotation, right rotation. If the left one contracts, left lateral rotation. All right. So that's what the sternocleidomastoid does. But if you only have a sternocleidomastoid stabilizing your neck, you would break your neck. Because what you need are two muscles, and what's the relationship going to be, the functional relationship between these two muscles to provide precise control and balance of your neck so you don't break your neck? You need to find an antagonist muscle, right? So sternocleidomastoid is anterior. Where would you start to think about to find a muscle that's antagonistic to the sternocleidomastoid? In the posterior neck, posterior cervical region. Okay, so I think on the very next slide, here is the posterior, right here is a scapula, spine of the scapula, nice posterior view. And here's that mastoid process once again, same insertion as the sternocleidomastoid. But here is a muscle called the splenius capitis, right? And there's also splenius cervicis right here. And the origin will be the cervical vertebrae and some thoracic vertebrae. And so when this muscle contracts, it is the skull that moves, not your vertebrae. Right? And it's antagonistic to the sternocleidomastoid. Opposite body compartments, opposite motion, and we see nice antagonistic control. So there are a whole bunch of these muscles right here, as we see. And for this particular class, all of these right here, you can just call the splenius muscles. You don't have to say, you don't have to break it down to capitis and cervicis and other kinds of muscles. Okay. All right, so that is by number of attachment points. Remember, origin first, insertion second. And on the exam coming up tomorrow, I'm going to give you a name of a muscle that you've never heard of before. And I'll either ask you the origin and insertion, and guess what? The name of the muscle will be the answer. Because if it's the first part of the word, it's going to be the origin. If it's a second part of that word, it's going to be the insertion, right? And so you just, in order to be able to answer that question, you just have to know your bone anatomy. That's all. Okay. Number of origins. Like the biceps has how many origins? Okay, it's got two. Okay, and triceps has three. And the quadriceps has four, right? So that is really nice. And again, so the name of the muscle is kind of the answer key. So let's take a look at the biceps brachii. Indeed, does it really have two origins? Okay, the big figure up over here that we've been looking at probably isn't too helpful. So let's go down right here. All right, so here is the biceps brachii. And the two origins, they are both on the scapula. Right, so the biceps brachii is the most anterior and superficial muscle in the arm. And we see that it has tendons that go all the way across the head of the humerus and inserts or attaches to the scapula. The two points, the coracoid process for the short head. And then here is a really long, narrow tendon. It goes between the greater tubercle and lesser tubercle on the humerus. What do we call that spot between the greater and lesser tubercle on the humerus? That is it's a groove, intertubercular groove, or intertubercular sulcus. Either one is fine. So the long head of the biceps brachii goes right through there, over the head of the humerus, and inserts into a point right above the glenoid fossa on the scapula that's called the supraglenoid tubercle. Supraglenoid tubercle. Remember, supra means on top. And then the insertion is way down over here in the forearm on the radius and the ulna. All right, so the action of this biceps is a little bit complicated because it causes flexion at the elbow, but it can also cause flexion at the shoulder. And I don't make a really big deal of that in this particular class. Usually I want you to know what's happening here at the elbow. And because it has some action at the shoulder, I don't really consider this the prime mover at the elbow. I consider the brachialis, which is deep, because it only works across the elbow, not across the shoulder. So it's okay with me if you say brachialis is the prime mover for forearm flexion. Okay, now what's going to be antagonistic to the biceps brachii? Opposite body compartment, right? Triceps brachii. I don't have a really fancy figure of this one, but one of the origins of the triceps brachii is going to be exactly opposite the origin of the long head of the biceps brachii. Remember, the origin for the long head is the supraglenoid tubercle. One origin for the triceps muscle, right? Remember, opposite body compartment, opposite motion is going to be the infraglenoid tubercle. So maybe you can appreciate some of that symmetry, right? If you can see symmetry, that usually simplifies your life immensely. Okay, so biceps, supraglenoid tubercle, triceps, infraglenoid tubercle in terms of the origin. Okay, actions. Flexor, sometimes we name a muscle by their action, like a flexor or an extensor, adductor, abductor. These are going to be really nice because they will tell you also what body compartment they're in. All right, so let's take a look at some of these. Here is a name of a muscle. Extensor carpi radialis longus. Now you should, looks like a really complicated name, but a lot of information is in the name. So here's a really nice answer key. What's the action of the extensor carpi radialis longus? It's going to be, it says right there, extension. Okay, an extension of what? Of your, where do you find carpals? What part of your body do you find carpals? Your wrist. So here is an extensor of the wrist, and you could have one on the medial side or lateral side of your forearm. This is where your muscles are going to be that can flex or extend your wrist. They're going to be in your forearm. So where is this muscle going to be, medial or lateral? It's going to be lateral because you see radialis, right? And you know the radius is the lateral bone. And you have a couple muscles that can extend your wrist. Some are going to be short. Some are going to be intermediate in size. Some are going to be relatively long. And what could you tell me about the extensor carpi radialis longus? It is the longest one in that group. Right? So in the name, you have all that really nice information. You don't really have to memorize anything about the extensor carpi radialis longus, as long as you know what? As long as you know what a carpal is, and as long as you know what the radial bone is, where it is located. Right? So that's why it's so important to know your skeleton. Okay, so that's nomenclature of muscles. Here is a pretty important list, and you might want to write this list out a couple times, memorize it, and then become familiar with it. So I have different body regions, like anterior neck, and the opposite region from anterior neck is what? Posterior neck. Opposite body sides of your body. What can you tell me about the action of muscles in these two locations, anterior neck compared to posterior neck? They're going to be opposite each other. We don't really call it that. We say what? Antagonistic. They're antagonistic. So the anterior neck causes flexion of the head or cervical spine, like the sternocleidomastoid we looked at. Posterior neck, right, is going to have the opposite action, extension of the cervical spine or the head. And we said the splenius muscle is a really good example of that. All right, so opposite body compartment, opposite action. Anterior trunk. We looked at some muscles for the anterior trunk, like the rectus abdominis. And the antagonistic muscles for the rectus abdominis you're going to find in the posterior trunk. Right? Opposite body compartment. There's a whole bunch of muscles. I would like to say you have thousands of muscles back there. That's probably not true, but you do have many, many, many of them. And I want you to be able to tell me the name, right, of all of these muscles in the back, right? These are their opposite body compartment to the rectus abdominis. And we're just going to call all of these the erector spinae. I don't want you to be able to subclassify them, but all of these are erector spinae, antagonistic to the rectus abdominis. muscle because it's opposite body compartment. Anterior posterior arm. Well, we looked at that already. Give me two muscles that are antagonistic to each other. First one in the anterior arm. Biceps brachii. What's going to be antagonistic to that in the posterior arm? Triceps brachii. Okay. Anterior forearm, posterior forearm. And so you have muscles here that attach to the wrist bones or to bones in your digits. What do we call those bones in your digits once again? Phalanges, right? They're phalanges. So you can have muscles, right? All of the anterior muscles in your forearm, whether they attach to the wrist or to the fingers, are going to cause flexion. All those are flexors. Flexors of the wrist or flexors of your digits in your anterior forearm. Where would you consider finding muscles that are going to extend or hyperextend the wrist and extend your digits? In your posterior forearm, right? So always think of anatomic position. Anterior forearm is really nicely defined. Posterior, right, is going to match up with the back of your hand, the posterior of your hand. Okay. So let me give you a quick little quiz, but I'll probably have to turn a light on just a little bit for a second. Let's try this one. Can you see my hand? Pretty much. All right, and I'm going to move part of my body, like so. What was that motion? Let me do it again. Okay, starting from here to here. What's that? That is flexion at the wrist, or you could say flexion of the hand, either one. So if that's flexion, all these anterior muscles are doing that. What is this motion called? Extension of the wrist or extension of the hand. Opposite body compartment muscles, like your posterior arm, are going to be doing that. Like the, oh, you mentioned it, extensor carpi radialis, extensor carpi ulnaris on the medial side. Okay, and what do we call muscles that do this? Okay, not that, but from here to here. What's happening to the angle of those phalanges when I go from here to here? Is it increasing or decreasing? Okay, here's 180 degrees, here is 90, here is less than 90, so that is flexion of the digits, right? Flexion of the thumb, and those are all going to be muscles in your anterior forearm. What do we call this motion? Extension, right? So what is this motion here? Okay, what is this? Decreasing the angle is flexion. Increasing the angle is extension, right? Flexion, extension of your thumb in particular. What digit is this? One. Yeah, don't say, you could say one or five. Don't say three or four or two, right? All right, so that's number one. That's how you start counting your digits. Okay. So that is carpal and digit muscles, anterior, posterior forearm, your thigh. Let's move down to your thigh. Again, you have anterior, posterior thigh, and one is going to be important for flexion, the other for extension at your knee, or you could say of your leg would be exactly the same thing. The quadriceps muscles. Where's my cursor? Okay, quadriceps muscles. Let's find some quadriceps here. This is nice. Oh, as a matter of fact, let's take a look at this. Okay, here are the quadriceps. I can see three of them. I can see the rectus femoris, and remember, femoral region is your thigh. And rectus means what? Straight. Rectus femoris is a straight muscle, big, powerful muscle. It has a couple companions over here, like the vastus lateralis, vastus medialis, all are part of the quadriceps femoris. The one that you can't see very well, right, is the intermedius, which is underneath the rectus femoris right here. That's the fourth one that you can't see. All of these muscles are in the same body compartment, produce the same motion. They have a common insertion into the patella. So here is the tendon of the quadriceps muscle. And then there's a ligament between the apical region of the patella into the tibia. And there's a rough raised area of the tibia that you should be aware of here called the tibial tuberosity, right? Tibial tuberosity. When these muscles contract, it pulls that tibial tuberosity anterior, so that causes an increase in the angle between the thigh and your leg. What do we call that motion? It's a kicking motion. What's that? That is extension of the knee or extension of your leg. You could call it either one. All right, so if the quadriceps are extensors at the knee, where would you start to think about flexors of the knee? Flexors of the knee, opposite body compartment, and I see them right here. Right, and that there's a group of muscles. There aren't four of them. There are three on this particular side. Commonly, they're called the hamstrings. And we have the biceps femoris, not the biceps brachii, because that's in the arm, right, by nomenclature. Femoral region is your thigh. Biceps femoris, semitendinosus, and semimembranosus, I can see in this region. These are going to be antagonistic to the quadriceps. So these are flexors of the leg. Okay. So that's anterior, posterior thigh for extension and flexion. Muscles of the leg, kind of like when we were looking at the forearm, right? Because the leg is below your knee and your forearm is below your elbow. These muscles you can group into particular actions as well. Dorsiflexion and plantar flexion. Okay, so as I'm standing here in anatomic position, I'm going to either plantar flex or dorsiflex and watch my shoulders. My shoulders get up off the ground like that, or watch the top of my head. Right? What do we call that motion? As my whole body is being elevated, that is plantar flexion. Okay, and if you do that, and you can stand up and work these muscles, and during the lecture exam or practicum, you're going to be standing anyway. What do we call that motion? When I point my toes into the ground, somebody told me plantar flexion, but what I wanted to ask was, where are those muscles located? I can feel them contracting. They're letting me know, you're working me too much already, so early in the morning. I can feel them contracting. Okay? Yes, the posterior. Here we go. Posterior leg. We have some muscles right here. Gastrocnemius. And you can see that gastrocnemius has two heads. There's a medial and lateral head to it. And also the soleus is going to be a nice companion muscle in the same body compartment. All of these posterior muscles cause plantar flexion, and those muscles have to be big and strong because it's got to elevate your whole body. Okay, so they're strong. The gastrocnemius and soleus have a common insertion into the calcaneal tendon. We call it the calcaneal tendon because the insertion is a bone, one of the tarsals called the calcaneus, right, is the calcaneus. So that's the calcaneal tendon. It also goes by the name of Achilles tendon from mythology. And this is an important muscle to what? To plantar flex. Really important. If this tendon right here gets ruptured or broken, then you can't plantar flex at all. Your foot is just going to wobble around on the bottom of your leg, right? And that happens fairly frequently. It's not infrequent that somebody will rupture a calcaneal tendon. And usually it's pretty dramatic because it's a very strong tendon connected to some very powerful muscles. When it operates, it's elevating your whole body, a lot of weight. And when it ruptures with a bang, usually. And sometimes you might have a couple teams playing soccer and all of a sudden somebody ruptures an Achilles tendon and everybody stops playing and they look to see who's got a shotgun or something, looking around for a gun, and everybody's looking around except one guy is on the ground. Okay, and what happened is that this tendon snapped, and it makes a really loud noise when it snaps. Okay, did anybody ever rupture a calcaneal tendon in here? Nobody? I'm glad. Okay, but you can recover from that. There are different ways to recover from that. Okay, so posterior leg, plantar flexors. Where are you going to find the dorsiflexors? In the anterior leg. And here is a muscle, big strong muscle in the anterior leg, the tibialis anterior. How are you going to know that this is in the anterior leg? Because it is part of the name of this particular muscle, tibialis anterior. It is anterior to what? What bone? to the tibia. That's right. And so that's going to be really nice for you to realize, okay, right here. All right, so I see the posterior leg muscles, gastrocnemius and soleus, and then anterior tibialis anterior. Okay, there are some extensor digitorum muscles, right, in the anterior leg. And what's the function of this extensor digitorum? What's the function? The name tells you. It extends what? Your toes, right? Because you can flex your toes, extend your toes. You could curl your toes. That's what we call flexion. You can straighten them out. That's what we call extension. Those muscles are in the anterior leg. And there are going to be some in the posterior leg that cause flexion of the digits, like the flexor digitorum are going to be in the posterior leg. Okay, so that's really important for you to know these body compartments. There'll be a couple of questions probably on the test regarding these things. All right, we got some time to look at a couple muscles. Some of these we've talked about already. All right, head muscles, occipitofrontalis. And this is a nice muscle because the origin and insertion is given to you in the name. What's the origin of the occipitofrontalis? I'm going to go find it. As I find it, you go ahead and tell me. Okay, occipital bone, right? And so sometimes the occipitofrontalis is called the epicranius. If you call it the epicranius, remember there are two divisions, the occipital belly, which is the origin, and that's connected to the frontal belly of the occipitofrontalis or the epicranius. These two muscles are connected by the galea aponeurotica, and that's a broad, flat tendinous sheath that generally we call an aponeurosis, but this one is given a special name. All right, so when this muscle contracts, right, what moves? Something around the occipital bone or something around the frontal bone? Something around the frontal bone, right? Because that's the end part of the word, and indeed that elevates the eyebrows. All right, so the origin is attached to this bone, the occipital bone. The insertion is to skin above the eyes or the eyebrows. That elevates the eyebrows when that contracts. All right, so that's a nice one. Next one, sternocleidomastoid. Again, that's a nice easy one because origin and insertion part of the name. Sternum and clavicle is the origin, right? And the insertion is mastoid process. It's in the anterior neck, right? So that's going to cause flexion. Posterior neck muscles are going to cause extension. And if only one contracts, that causes rotation, right? If they both contract, it's going to be flexion. We talked about that. Here I can see the sternocleidomastoid. Antagonistic to that is the splenius muscles, which I see over here if you can see my cursor moving. Right, if we get rid of some of these muscles, if we get rid of that platysma, we can look at the deeper muscles. Here's that sternocleidomastoid, and then here is the sternocleidomastoid. Let's go one more slide. Ah, splenius muscles over here in the posterior neck. Okay, some trunk muscles. We looked at the rectus abdominis already. Where the heck is the rectus abdominis? Ah, here's a nice rectus abdominis. What is that line between the right and left side of the rectus abdominis? It's a white line. It's the linea alba, right? It's a connective tissue that connects these muscles together. All right, and so it has two attachment points, up by the xiphoid process, one down by the pubis. When this muscle contracts, go ahead, contract it. What moves in your body? Pubic bone or xiphoid process? Xiphoid process, so xiphoid process is the insertion. Did I get it right? Origin, pubis. Oh, I did get it right. Insertion, xiphoid process, and what's the function? Okay, in this anterior compartment, these are going to be flexion of the vertebral column. Where would you find some muscles for extension of the vertebral column? The posterior trunk. You have a whole bunch of muscles in your posterior trunk. I mentioned it. You might have to go back and listen to lecture once again because I'm talking about a lot of stuff, but does anybody recall what muscles are in the posterior trunk? Do I have them? For extension? Oh. Sorry, let me go find them. There they are. The what? Erector spinae, opposite body compartment for extension of the vertebral column. Okay, upper limbs, biceps brachii, triceps brachii, opposite body compartment, so you know that their action is opposite or antagonistic to each other. And then here are the origins and insertions that I've talked about already. So I won't go over those. All right, but you should probably know those for the test. Gastrocnemius. We just got done talking about gastrocnemius, and that is in the posterior leg. All the muscles in the posterior leg, big, powerful, strong muscles, cause plantar flexion. Anterior leg are going to be for dorsiflexion. So what about the gastrocnemius? Look, there's a medial and lateral head. All right, so there are two heads to the gastrocnemius that we saw. Let me put this away, go back to gastrocnemius, which is here. All right, so here's the gastrocnemius. Can you see my cursor moving? The medial head, lateral head. And where do these things originate from? Okay, the medial and lateral condyles of the femur. All right, or epicondyles is another good way to say that. Right, and you should know where those are. And the insertion is what? The calcaneus, via the calcaneal tendon. And I see that right over here. And the soleus is just deep to the gastrocnemius, produces the same motion, so the soleus is the synergist to the gastrocnemius. And what the heck does that gastrocnemius do? It plantar flexes the ankle. And since it actually goes across the knee, okay, to the condyles of the femur right here, it also can flex at the knee. But probably the one I want you to know is that it plantar flexes. It pulls the calcaneus superiorly, which then forces your toes into the ground. Okay, let's look at a couple other muscles. So these are pretty important, but I want to focus on some antagonistic groups of muscles. And I want to work over a joint which is not really obvious to me. Okay, in your upper thorax, here is the pectoralis major muscle. And the pectoralis major muscle is important for the motion that I'm going to demonstrate for you right now. Okay, so if you look at my shoulder or my arm, it's going to move like that. What do we call that motion? From here to here. At the shoulder or of the arm. What motion is that? That's a really difficult one to remember. But if you pair that motion with the hip, what do we call this motion of the hip? Moving like this. What's happening to the angle? Increasing or decreasing? Decreasing, so that's got to be flexion. Yeah, so here's flexion at the hip. Here is extension at the hip, right? Here's a hyperextension at the hip. And it's going to be the same for the shoulder. So this is at the shoulder, flexion of the shoulder. This is extension at the shoulder, and then you can hyperextend the shoulder as well. Okay. So the pectoralis major, prime mover for flexion of your arm or flexion at the shoulder. Where would you look to find a muscle that is going to be antagonistic to it? Which means it what? Extends the shoulder. Where are you going to look? Okay. Posterior trunk, right, or posterior thorax. All right, so the anterior thorax was the pectoralis major. If we look over here, I see it. Big, strong, powerful muscle. This is the latissimus dorsi. So latissimus dorsi, now because you see it opposite body compartment to the pectoralis major, you know what the action of the latissimus dorsi is, which is what? Extension at the shoulder. Okay, so there is an activity that you can do to build some muscles up, like the brachialis and the biceps, as well as the latissimus dorsi, right? You can grab a bar that's above your head, and you can pull yourself up to that bar. All right, does anybody know what that's called? Has something to do with your chin. Okay, the bar isn't moving down to you. You're moving up to the, I don't have a bar to grab onto. Otherwise, I'd be happy to do like a couple hundred of those, right? But since I don't have a bar, I can't do it. All right, so that's called a chin-up. So what are the motions that are happening here? What's happening at the elbow? What's happening at the elbow? What's going at the elbow? What do you call that? From here, that's straight, to here, the elbow's bent. What is that? Flexion. And what are muscles that flex at the elbow? The biceps and brachialis. Right? But what's another motion that's happening? Not only can you flex, you can do this with your humerus, right? To bring your chin up. So at the shoulder, what is this motion at the shoulder? Okay. At the shoulder, this is, remember, this is flexion. Here is extension. To do a pull-up, what do you have to do at the shoulder? You also have to extend at the shoulder. So you got to flex at the elbow and extend at the shoulder. What muscle is important for extending the shoulder? Not flexing. Flexing was pectoralis, but extending is the, oh, I have the cursor right on it. It is the latissimus dorsi. Right, so doing that chin-up, latissimus dorsi is important, as well as the biceps and brachialis. Okay, and so those are two antagonistic muscles, latissimus dorsi and pectoralis major. Let's look at a couple other antagonistic muscles. And let's look at the hip. So I demonstrated this not too long ago, a couple seconds ago, at the hip. What is this motion? Okay, from here to here. That is decreasing the angle. That is flexion at the hip. And going from here to here is extension. And muscles that produce those two different motions should be on opposite sides of your body. And let's take a look at what some of those muscles are. Okay. Important muscle groups for hip, flexion and extension. Here it is right here. Well, I can see some extensors. It's been cut away. So let's go back to, it's a superficial muscle. All right, so we'll be able to see it. So here is a nice exam figure, anterior person, but we want to look in the posterior muscles that go across the hip. Here is the gluteus maximus. All right, so gluteus maximus goes across the hip. It's going to extend at the hip. For instance, if you're climbing stairs and you step on a stair and then elevate your whole body, what's happening at your hip when you do this to stand up on a stair? That is, okay, that is extension. Going from here, right, like I step on a stair and then I raise my body up, that is extension at the hip. Prime mover for that is gluteus maximus, posterior hip. Where would you find a muscle that is going to produce this motion? What do you call this motion once again? This is like to bend your hip to reach the step in front of you. That is flexion at the hip. We want to look at the opposite body compartment, which is going to be your anterior hip. And I can't show you on here because it's a deep muscle. I can see just a little piece of it. So let me find a better example of where to see it. The anterior hip. Down over here. Okay. Anterior thigh. Well, it's got to be right here. I see it. Okay, so here's the lumbar vertebrae. Here is the iliac crest. Here's the quadriceps muscle, so indeed this is the anterior thigh. This one right here, I'll just mention sartorius. This is the longest muscle in your body. We're not concerned with that right at the moment. But here are a couple muscles that are anterior to the os coxae. Remember, the gluteus maximus is posterior to the os coxae. And this muscle has two origins, up along the lumbar vertebrae, and the insertion is way down to the lesser trochanter on the femur. Right? And so when this muscle contracts, it sort of elevates the femur up. That's what we call flexion. This is what we call the iliacus. Right? And the psoas major. The muscle, the second muscle that has that same common insertion, the origin is the ilium. Right? And it joins together with the psoas major to cause hip flexion. So when sometimes we talk about these muscles working together because they are synergists, they produce hip flexion, we call these the iliopsoas muscles. Anterior hip. Anterior hip for flexion, posterior hip for? Where do I have to go for posterior hip? Okay, here is gluteus maximus. Unfortunately, it's been cut away. I can see a piece of it here, and here, and here's the piece that's been cut away. Okay, so this is posterior hip for extension. All right, so that's pretty good for flexors, extensors, or any... Oh, yeah, here's something else. What can you tell me about abduction and adduction? What's the relationship in that motion between abduction and adduction? That, are they synergist motions or rotations or what? They are antagonistic motions. So for muscles that abduct and adduct, where would you expect to find them? Adductors compared to abductors, where are they going to be? Opposite sides of your body, right? And all of the adductors are going to be medially aligned from the femur over to the pubic bone. All of these are adductors, right? Because they will pull the femur toward midline. And there's a whole bunch of them. Some are long, and that's going to be called the adductor. If it's the long one, the adductor longus. And there's going to be one big, huge, massive one. That's going to be the adductor magnus. Right, but all of these are adductors. There's a short one too, like here's the adductor brevis, and even a smaller one called a pectineus. All right, so all of these produce adduction, which is what? Bringing your legs together. These have to be really strong muscles, because if your legs, if those were weak muscles or not existing, then your legs could spread apart like so, and then what would happen to you? If you can't hold your legs together, your legs are going to spread apart. If that were to happen to me right now, what would happen? Well, I'd just fall on my butt, right? Because nothing would be holding me up. My legs would just be apart from each other. So these have to be strong because they're holding my whole body up. All right, so adductors. Where would we find abductors? Not medially, but laterally. Okay, so let's see if we can find a muscle that's lateral. And indeed we can. Right? That motion does not require a lot of strength, and that muscle is called the tensor fasciae latae. I don't have it here. Let me see, where do I have it? Here's where I was looking. Well, probably right here. All right, so here are all the adductors. That's what we were looking at, right, for bringing your legs together. And right over here is the tensor fasciae latae, which is for, what's the action of the tensor fascia lata? If these are all adductors, opposite body compartment, the tensor is an abductor, right? And that's a motion that we don't really use very much. We don't have to have a big, powerful group of muscles over here. We only have this really small one. And it connects down here to your knee via a tendinous ligament, and that's called the iliotibial band, okay, because it goes down to the tibia, it's connected to the ilium, and sometimes, does anybody know what the iliotibial band sometimes is called? I don't know if there's any athletes that maybe injured this particular muscle or overstretched it, physical therapy. Instead of saying iliotibial band, sometimes it's called the IT band. IT band is right here. And it's right on top of this big, powerful muscle, the vastus lateralis of the quadriceps. All right, so again, antagonistic motions. One last thing I want to show you today is a nice website. Maybe some of you have looked at this website already called Get Body Smart, and it has its own page and Blackboard set up for you to go to these places. And I want to demonstrate to you the iliopsoas. So here's the psoas major, here's the iliacus, and I see a bunch of muscles on top of it, like these adductor muscles, the quadriceps, even the sartorius. Oh, and here's that tensor fascia lata right here. And we want to look at the iliacus, which is the muscle where I have the cursor right now. So here's an illustration that helps you name what these muscles are. That's really handy, right? But we can isolate right to the iliacus by using this slider, right? So here's like a virtual dissection program. So we just got rid of a muscle. We just got rid of the sartorius, and you can practice this, right? And then we just got rid of the rectus femoris. And let's get rid of some more. I didn't see what disappeared. Oh, tensor fascia lata disappeared. Okay, and then the other parts of the quadriceps moved, like the vastus medialis and lateralis, they're disappeared. Now maybe the vastus intermedius, which is what, the one right here in the middle that you can't see because it's deep to the rectus femoris. Does that one go away when I go down here? Yeah, that just disappeared. All right, so what am I beginning to see now? A little bit better. The psoas major and iliacus. If we put psoas major and iliacus together, what do we get? The iliopsoas muscle. We can't quite see all of it just yet. So let's get rid of maybe some adductors. Oh yeah, nice. All right, so a little pectineus went away. And adductor longus went away. Oh, gracilis went away. Let's get rid of all of these. All right. All right, so I can see the origin, and the insertion is the lesser trochanter on the femur. So when these muscles contract, it's going to pull this lesser trochanter up to the ilium and to these vertebrae, lumbar vertebrae. This side is really nice because it tells you what the origin is right here, the iliac fossa, right? Iliac fossa on the adscoxae. And the insertion is, what have I been telling you, lesser trochanter. So that's nice to see these muscles in isolation. And now you want to know what the action is. Anterior hip, what I want you to know, this flexes the hip. And what can we see? We can actually get these muscles all out of there. So now I just see the iliacus and flexes. If you click on flexes, guess what happens? We see flexion on this little mannequin right here. Okay, so does this look like flexion to you, going from here to here? Flexion at the hip, right? It's decreasing this angle between your trunk and your thigh. Increasing, right? So decreasing the angle here is flexion, right? So that's the prime motion for the iliacus. And here is extension. Where would you look to find muscles that extend the hip? If the iliacus is anterior, you want to go to the posterior compartment. What's your favorite muscle in the posterior compartment? Gluteus maximus for extension. So what's extension? It goes from here to here at the hip. All right, let me go back a page and see if there is a gluteus. Look at all these right here. Gluteus maximus. I don't see gluteus maximus. It's got to be here someplace. Muscles act on the arm, shoulder, forearm, wrist, anterior thigh. Oh! The reason why I don't see it, because I can use the slider over here. Muscles that act on the posterior thigh. Let's go there. And here is the gluteus maximus. So, gluteus maximus. Let's isolate on that one. Here's the gluteus maximus. Posterior thigh. Let's get them all back. Okay, let's get rid of some of these other muscles. We'll do our little virtual dissection. Get rid of them. Hamstrings are gone. The gastrocnemius is gone. Nice. Okay, so here's the gluteus maximus. One thing I did notice, I saw some colors. I see like a red and a blue. And I think that's the convention on this particular website, even on the skeleton that we have upstairs. The origin is shaded on a bone in a red color. The insertion is shaded on a bone with a blue color. That's the insertion. So when this muscle contracts, what bone moves? Does the adscoxae or ilium move, or does the femur move? The femur, because that's the insertion. Okay, so let's put that muscle back completely like so. And you got the origin and insertion and extension. All right, so do you believe that's extension of the hip? That's extension of the hip. What were we just looking at for flexion? The iliopsoas muscles. Okay, iliopsoas muscles. Opposite body compartments once again. One last thing that I want to bring to your attention. And let me go back to your book. So you can work a lot of muscles in that Get Body Smart to know origins and insertions probably will help you a lot on the practicum. And let's look at the shoulder. The shoulder has a lot of mobility compared to the hip. They're both ball and socket joints. And since the shoulder has a lot more mobility, that means it has more muscles, but they're not as powerful. The glenoid fossa is relatively shallow compared to the acetabulum. And so the shoulder joint can be damaged pretty easily. All right, so here's the shoulder. Here's that latissimus dorsi we were talking about, deltoid. The most superficial muscle is the trapezius. It has all kinds of different actions because look at what that broad origin is of the trapezius. But the muscles that I want to look at are deep. So the superficial muscles are on the left. The deeper muscles, if we remove the deltoid and latissimus dorsi and trapezius, I can see on the right side of this illustration. All right, so here are some deeper muscles. And I said sometimes muscles are named by the shape. Here is a muscle that's square, but it's angulated a little bit. What do you call a square or a rectangle that's been angulated a little bit? A rhomboid, right? So here is a rhomboid, and there's a rhomboid major and minor, and guess which one is the bigger one? The major, rhomboid major. And then here's a rhomboid minor. Okay, here is the scapula, spine of the scapula. Here is the muscle in the supraspinous fossa that we call the supraspinatus, right? Spine of the scapula. Here's the fossa below the spine. This is the infraspinous fossa. The muscle in the infraspinous fossa is the infraspinatus. So here's the supraspinatus, infraspinatus. There are a couple teres muscles. Here's the teres minor. Here's the teres major. They go across the shoulder. These are important adductors or rotators of the shoulder, depending on where they're connected to. But you can see when these muscles contract, it pulls the humerus over. Okay, and there's one other muscle that I can't see very well, which is on the anterior side of the scapula. All right, what, can anybody remember the name of that fossa on the anterior side of the scapula? That is the, so here is what, the supraspinatus, supraspinous fossa, infraspinous fossa. The one on the other side is a subscapular fossa. Fantastic. The muscle in that subscapular fossa is the subscapularis. All right, so let's go over some of these muscles. Supraspinatus, infraspinatus, teres minor. Let's ignore the teres major, but here's the teres minor. And the one on the anterior scapula is the subscapularis. Notice they go over the head of the humerus, and they participate in making the joint capsule of the shoulder. Right, so sometimes muscles, tendons from muscles help make the joint capsule. So anytime any of these muscles are injured, the supraspinatus, infraspinatus, teres minor, or the subscapularis, when they get injured, right, it also damages the joint capsule of the shoulder. That's a very common kind of injury, right? And since all these tendons form like a cuff over the head of the humerus right here, all these are considered cuff muscles. When you rip or tear or damage any of these, it produces a rotator cuff injury. Right? Rotator cuff. Has anyone ever heard of a rotator cuff injury? Rotator cuff? Yeah, probably very easy to do, happens all the time. Okay. And so the rotator cuff is made from these muscles. The supraspinatus, infraspinatus, the teres minor, and the subscapularis. Let's see if I have a picture of the subscapularis anywhere handy. No, supra, infra, teres. Minor, not the teres major, because that's way down over here. What about the subscapularis? Ah, subscapularis, right? It goes across the shoulder, inserts into the head of the humerus. It's another muscle that helps make up the joint capsule. And any injury to that joint capsule is very painful and inhibits the range of motion of the shoulder. And so I do want you to know what muscles make up the rotator cuff. Actually, the tendons of the rotator cuff, because it's so common. So I wrote it here on the board. Rotator cuff, can you see this way in the back? One way to remember it is with this little acronym. right? Remember IPMAP for the phases of mitosis? Here's an acronym that says what? What does that say? I want to find out if you can actually read this or if I need to write, do I need to write it in a darker marker? Can you see that? Yeah, it's sits, right? So sits are muscles that make up the rotator cuff. Injury to any of these produces a rotator cuff injury. So what are these muscles? S for supraspinous or subscapular, right? So maybe supraspinous, supraspinatus. I stands for infraspinatus. T for teres, all right? And it's the smaller one, so you might want to put teres, maybe M-I-N maybe. Don't say major, teres minor. And then this one here is going to be the subscapularis, right? So sits. Just remember sits, and hopefully you can remember the names of those muscles. Supraspinatus, infraspinatus, teres minor, and subscapularis. And I think I talked about this before. A nice way to maybe partially diagnose a rotator cuff injury, because these muscles produce rotation at the shoulder, is to actually have somebody do a rotation, a lateral rotation with their shoulder. So how do you see a lateral rotation? First, flex at the elbow, like this, using biceps. Right. So now if I rotate the humerus, you can observe that by seeing where my wrist is moving. Right. So here is a medial rotation of the humerus. Here is a lateral rotation. You can do the same thing without your elbow bent, but it's kind of harder to see. Right. All right. So bend the elbow, medial rotation, lateral rotation. Rotator cuff injury, it's very difficult to produce a lateral rotation because the joint capsule is damaged. So if you have somebody put pressure on your hand while they're trying to do a lateral rotation, they just can't do it because it hurts so bad. Or if you make them do it, or if you push real hard, they'll scream because it hurts really bad, right? So what are those muscles that participate in the rotator cuff? Supraspinatus, infraspinatus, teres minor, and subscapularis. Okay. Well, sign-in sheet is going around, and I'll get this lecture online before 5 tonight. Let me check and make sure that it got recorded. Did it get recorded? Looks good. I got it. Okay, any questions before I turn the recorder off? No questions? Okay, don't forget your picture ID tomorrow, please. What can you tell me about that eraser you have to bring? You have to check it out first. Make sure that it works so you don't smudge up your Scantron. Okay.